All right, we're... I had a clip.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father. The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
We're having some difficulties, as you can see. I'm about 5 minutes getting on the air. I hope you stuck with me. Let's see if we can. About 5 minutes late. I mean, this is something. I know why, and we're going to get this stuff fixed. Yeah, we're going to get it. We're going to get it together. Okay. All right. Clips a little bit slower than it started. So what can I say? All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting on Block Talk Radio, Internet Radio, and I am glad to be here. I hope you are there, and if you're not, I know you're going to download the show and listen to the show at your own convenience. I've been doing this for almost 2 years. I think coming up in August, it'll be 2 years that I have been doing this show. That's a damn shame. All right, but I enjoyed it. I love it. I love it. Or if I didn't, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't be here, and you wouldn't be there, and you wouldn't know anything about my show. And, once again, there's no guest. I will not be on the show tomorrow. I have to go and have a procedure done at the doctor's office. You know. I'm booked to that date, February 3rd, far in advance to be off the show because I knew I had an appointment on that day to see the doctor going to the hospital. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just something you have to do, procedure, caution, see if there's anything wrong. I know there's something wrong, but, you know, I just hope it's not too serious. All right. Great stuff up there on Amazon, George Wilder Jr. Put that in the text bar up there and just click and, you know, and check out some of my books, novels, and short stories. That stuff is good. It's great. I've gotten some great feedback from it. And I wouldn't be telling you guys about it if I write or something that I produce. I share it because I want you to be just as joyful and to have a good time. You know, my stuff is fun. You know, it's really fun. Check that stuff out on Amazon.com. I have a book up there called Mary, Rest in Peace. And I've been getting so many good responses for it. I mean, wow, I thought Jesus Christ, Son of Man. But I'm getting it for, actually, Mary, Rest in Peace, Caught Reading. I'm getting some great responses, so you guys go up there and check it. You're listening to George Wilder. It was opinion and commentary, so I just switched it to commentary and opinion. It's just me running off at the mouth. Okay. All right. Anything and everything you want, you know, 347-857. You can call in or you can sit back and listen and enjoy the show. Make sure you tell others about this show, about me, you know, and my show. And let's get started. As you know, I'm broadcasting live out of Chicago. And the problems along with the world. And we're going to, I don't know if I want to talk about the caucus. I'm going to say this about the caucus. And then we're going to move on to some Chicago issues because there's a lot of them. The caucus, the Iowa caucus, Donald Trump lost Iowa. Why Donald Trump? I mean, I know a lot of us have listened to Donald Trump for months and months and months and months. His BS. You know, I remember that comment he said if he shot somebody on the street, his supporters would still vote for him. Apparently they didn't. They did not. They ran from him. You know, Donald Trump, he's just about in third place. He's a, I mean, he went from behind Marco Rubio. Of course, Cruz won Iowa. I think, I don't like Cruz. I don't think too many progressive winner their props. You have to give a winner his or her props. You know, you've won, you're running winner. He won because he had a better ground game than Trump. He won because he had a better ground game. He had things, he had people working the grounds. And plus, he won because Cruz was there in Iowa. Trump wasn't. Trump thought his looks, his good looks, his oratory speeches were going to get him some places, someplace. And his direct talk, bullying talk that he does, you know, talking about people, the way they look, the way they dress, you know, if people criticize him, he's going to go back and just, you know, excoriate them, throwing people out of his rallies, violence, you know, and people didn't like that. I mean, I was fooled by that because actually I thought Donald Trump was going to win Iowa. I really did because I know he had a lot of followers, and most of his followers were white, racist, mean, nasty people. And the only thing you ever heard Donald Trump say about issues pertaining to the United States, I'm going to make America great. America is going to be great again. America's going to be, look at me, I'm handsome, I'm rich. America's going to be great again. Don't vote for that guy, he's ugly. Vote for me, I'm handsome. Vote for me. And that's about the gist of his campaign. He never talked about the issues. Donald Trump does not know anything about issues. He missed the last Republican debate, from my thinking, is because he could not stand up against some of the guys on that stage because they knew a lot more than he did on foreign policy, the economy. They knew a lot more than he did. He would have been embarrassed. That's why he left. That's why one of the reasons why he didn't show up. And then he's going to try and extort money from Fox News saying, hey, you want me to appear on Fox News on a debate, Republican debate on the stage? Give me $5 million. And I'm saying this is the second time he tried to extort money from somebody by saying that he's not going to show up unless they pay him. This guy is nuts. He's nuts. But Cruz, I believe, is a lot dangerous than Donald Trump. But Donald Trump did this to himself. He did not work the state. He cut out on a debate. People don't like that. He missed a debate, deliberately missed a debate, and he had his own debate on some other channel, which nobody hardly watched, from my understanding. But he lost. And you know what? I'm glad Donald Trump lost because I don't want to see him as the president of the United States. He's not presidential material. He's at a fourth grade level. And he's a bully when he talks. Now, from what I understand, he's going to be a little bit more milder, gentler, because he lost Iowa. Donald Trump thought that he was going to win. He thought he could win up at the debates. He thought he could win without showing up in Iowa and shaking hands and going around the state and talking and meeting people. He thought he could win that way. But he had a rude awakening. But I can tell you this, any one of those Republican candidates, no matter who is the nominee, Hillary will beat them in a head-to-head contest, or either it will be Bernie Sanders who would beat a Republican candidate in a head-to-head matchup for president of the United States. like I said before, I'm glad Donald Trump lost. I mean, I don't think he deserved to win. The way he's been acting, treating people, being a bully, being just obnoxious and saying crazy things and thinking that's going to get him the election. He had a rude awakening. He has to be a better candidate. He has to show people that he deserves to be president of the United States. If he doesn't do that, then he's not going to be elected. He's not going to be the nominee. And on the Democratic side of the aisle, Hillary Clinton edged out. I mean, when I say edged out, I mean like a hair of a victory over Bernie Sanders. To me, everybody said Hillary won. Hillary, she beat him by a couple of inches of points, a nose. It was totally a tiny margin that she pulled out this victory. She was so scared she was going to lose, like she did in 2008. Iowa. They both were at 49%, a virtual tie. Somehow they gave it to Hillary. But in my mind, and in some other people's minds, I think Bernie Sanders won Iowa. You know why? Because he is not taking money. He's not bought off. He's not Wall Street. He's not Goldman Sachs. He's not a Clinton. He raised his money the old-fashioned way. People donated to him. Hillary had to take off the campaign trail one day last week and go to Philadelphia and beg for money. Don't get me wrong. If Hillary wins the nomination, if she gets the nomination and put her in office, any Democrat, even Martin O'Malley, any Democrat Democrat, and I do think that any Democrat up against a Republican would win. Check the Democratic side of the aisle. Hillary Clinton got 49% of the vote. Bernie Sanders got 49% of the vote. What did the Republicans get? 28%, 24%, 23%? Head-to-head combat, they will be blown out of the water by a Democrat. That's just simple semantics. Simple semantics. But one of the things we have to do, and a lot of us do not do, we have to get out there and vote. Vote. Please vote. You've got to vote. You've got to do that. I'm turning down some of this sound. I think I'm too loud. Okay, you have to vote. There is no doubt about that. And if you vote Democratic across the board. Because, like I said yesterday and in some other back shows, if you're going to vote for a Democratic candidate for the White House in 2016, you also have to give that Democratic candidate or that Democratic president-elect, you have to give this person someone to work with. As we have seen for many, many years, Democrats cannot work and Republicans will refuse to work or compromise with a Democratic president. Obama is evident of that. So if you're going to vote Democrat, vote it across the board. What I mean across the board is vote for a Democratic representative, a Democratic senator. And we have to take back the House and the Senate by putting in more progressives. And the only way we're going to do that, you must vote across the board when it comes 2016. And let me say this, don't just vote in the presidential race or the midterms. Vote every chance you get. If you have an alderman, something in your community, vote for the better of the aldermen. We got a lot of aldermen in Chicago. I think we got about 50 of them. they were once rubber stamping Rahm Emanuel, who was the mayor, every chance they got. I don't want rubber stamping aldermen. To me, they're just a bunch of kiss asses. That's all, when they rubber stamp everything, do everything, and give the mayor everything he wants, regardless of what their constituency say, the people who voted their asses in office. But that's one of my put their asses in office, especially in Congress, United States Congress. They don't represent us. They don't. And they're getting away with not representing us, not just in Congress, but in houses also. This is why I said we have to vote to take this country back. Republican gets in the White House and there's a Republican Congress, America is done. You can talk all you want to. You can bitch. You can yell. You can rail. This is not right. That's not right. These people are crazy. It doesn't matter. If you don't vote and a Republican takes the White House in 2016, this year, November 2016, we're in a lot of trouble. They are going to take away everything. Do you hear Ted Cruz? He's going to strip every inch of Obamacare away. He wants to take Social Security. They want to make sure you don't get a pension. They don't give a damn about if you work or not. They want to make this country is ran by corporations, but it's going to be more of a corporate country if a Republican gets in office. So we have to vote. We got to get out there and do that. So from this day on this show, and I'm on Monday through Thursday, 6 to 7:30, sometimes 6 to 8, it depends on, you know. I will be railing and talking about getting out the vote. Getting out the vote, especially for, I think there's going to be a caucus in Illinois on March 15th. I'm not sure. I got to check on that. We got to get some information on that. But you have to vote. Vote every time you need to vote. If you're not registered, get registered. Take someone to the polls. Take someone out there and say, vote, 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 vote. If you don't, and I mean this, and I'm not trying to scare anybody, but if you don't vote, we're through. It's over. The Republicans are going to have the House, the White House. They're going to have the House of Representatives, and they're going to have the U.S. Congress, and we are done. You know what? I think the reason why this country is in the shape that it's in is because people did not vote. You didn't vote. And trust me and believe me, every day that November 2016 approaches, the Republicans are trying to figure out a way to suppress the vote, to keep you from voting. If you know that the Republicans are trying to keep you from voting, that should give you more of an incentive to make sure that you vote. Do not think that your vote is a waste of time. Your vote is going to count whether you vote or not. Because if you do not vote, that is a vote for a Republican. So why let someone use your vote? Use your own vote. It's your vote. You go do what you can with that vote. You go vote with your vote. You don't vote, that will cause a Republican to take office, and they're going to wreak havoc on you. There is no doubt about that. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm so happy to be on the radio too. I mean, sometimes I can't wait to come on the radio. As like I've said, I have a guest for today, and that's fine. But I do have a guest for Thursday, Yvette W. Jones. I had to, you know, move her around because she kept, well, I think she rescheduled a few times. So, well, anyway, stay with me for that. And, it's a mess. It's a mess. I want to take a break right now. I'll be right back. Stay with me. All right, all right. We're having a teacher strike in Chicago, it seems like. The teachers have rejected the city's offer. And the unions are saying they're pissed off. They can't trust the unions. They can't trust CPS. They can't trust the city. You know, they. I think the city gave them a real good offer. I really do. I mean, it was to try to keep them from striking, but the teachers, they want a better offer. I mean, hey, wow. I keep saying that these teachers aren't really in love with teaching. They're in love with what they can get from the city. They love with what city can, you know, put into their pockets. I mean, there's people disagree with me. I really don't care. I think some of the teachers, not all of them, are just gold diggers. They claim they care for the children that they teach, but they don't. If they care for the kids that they teach, they wouldn't be out there striking every goddamn month. But they use the kids. You know, they use the kids, and some of the kids support their teachers also. But some of them really don't know that their teachers are gold diggers, and they want their pockets lined with cash, city cash. This is what I think. If you disagree, 347-857-1762, in an apparent effort to turn up the heat on floundering negotiations, the Chicago Public Schools announced it would be forced to make. Okay, Chicago Public Schools are being forced to make $100 million in new cuts. They've already had previous cuts. They cut basically staff, okay, but now they're going to be cutting teachers. And this was announced one day after the teacher, the city's offer, which I thought was a good offer, you know. So, but they would have to pay more towards their pension, higher union dues or whatever that was. They didn't like that. They didn't really like that. They had to pay more toward their health care. They didn't like that. That's why they rejected it. That's one of the reasons for why they rejected it. The Chicago Teachers Union blasted proposed cuts in the news. In a news release, the union issued even before the CPS held the news conference to announce them. They blasted the cuts. But that's the thing they can do. They can strike. Public schools are just awful. Aren't they awful? But a lot of people send their kids to public schools because they can't afford private schools. But you know what? A lot of private school parents are getting their kids out of private school and putting them in public school because of financial problems. But I'm going to tell you something. The Chicago public schools, and I've dealt with them because I've had kids. But unions and politicians and the kids, the students, an education, but they can't get it because of the unions. They're always asking for more money, and they're striking. The politicians are mismanaging, you know, so the students are stuck in the middle. The adults in the rooms are the assholes, not the children. They want an education. And somehow they are not getting it. It's just, it's just a mess. It's just a mess. TU, Chicago Teachers Union, called an act of intimidation and bullying because teachers refused to accept a flawed contract offer. CTU President Karen Lewis was even more blunt, calling it the latest act of war. Now, they're calling this an act of war. That's stupid. As if they're the CTU, the Chicago Public, Chicago Teachers Union, are at war with the city of Chicago. And promising a rally of teachers at 4:30 p.m. They're going to be rallying Thursday at LaSalle and Adams, that's downtown, in the heart of the city's financial district. Man, man, man. It's a mess in this city, folks. And I live here. Wow. And this is not all. The teachers union, the Chicago Public School mess is not all. We have a governor who wants to take over the schools. Bruce Rauner, this plays right into his hands because he wants to bust unions. And seeing the unions in disarray and calling this an act of war is playing right into this guy's hand because he wants to bust them anyway. If the unions keep acting like this and, you know, they want more and the public schools, they're actually broke. How can the teachers get more money without giving up something? Because the schools are broke. They have no money. They're busted. The governor is talking about bankrupting the schools. So it is a mess. It is a mess. I'll be right back. Stay with me, folks. Rauner said he wants to take over the schools. And if he takes over the schools, okay, he's saying that the state is preparing to take the CPS. If the state takes over CPS, the state is going to file bankruptcy. I don't think this is a good idea. Education members to start looking for an interim superintendent for the Chicago cash-strapped school district. Wow, they're going to get rid of Claypool at a news conference in Springfield to discuss legislation that would change the state's procurement progress. Rauner said he's already told the State Board of Education to begin the process of identifying who can take over as superintendent. This is serious. Wow, I guess if he takes over the schools, I guess Forrest Claypool is out. The state is going to be ready to step in and take action, Rauner said the day after the Chicago teachers rejected a contract proposal from CPS. Rauner wants to get rid of the unions. He wants to throw their asses out. Rauner feels that the unions are the problem. And at this point, it seems like they, like I said, folks, they had, the city offered them a contract. The city offered concessions. And they were reasonable from where I stand. And the teachers union turned them down. And now here come Rauner, gung-ho. He wants to take over the schools. He wants to take over Chicago. He may have a leg in this because these people are screwing up. Rauner is a screw-up, but other people are screwing up, so he's going to – and that makes him look good, actually. So stay tuned, folks. I'm even stay tuning for this because it's baffling me because – like I said, I've dealt personally with Chicago Public Schools, and I've never liked it. And I'm a child of Chicago Public Schools. I don't think they're all that bad in learning and education, but you've got teachers, overzealous teachers, who want to line their pockets. Simple as that. And they're holding the kids hostage until they get what they want, and that's wrong. Because they know that the schools are broke. They know that there is no money. They know that Rauner wants to bust their asses. If Rauner gets in there and start controlling schools, these people are going to be out of a job faster than the city would have laid them off. Because Rauner hates unions. He despises them. He can't stand them. And he hates to see Rahm Emanuel and the city buckle under the teachers union. He doesn't like that. It pisses him off, man. He fumes at the mouth when it comes to unions. I'm talking about Governor Rauner. He is a Republican governor, of course. And he wants the Chicago Public Schools. Oh, boy. This is just too much. It's too much. We've got so much crap. And on top of that, we don't even have a state budget. Without a state budget. Instead of trying to get a state budget, Rauner's trying his best to take over the schools. He wants state to take over the schools. If the state takes over the schools, kiss the unions goodbye. Kiss the unions goodbye. It's just... I don't know. It's just mind-boggling. I'll be right back, folks. Let's see if we... Okay, we're going to play... I'm going to do something else on book reviews. We had a show yesterday on how to get many, many, many book reviews on Amazon. If you've just written a book, you know, you can... and everybody needs reviews because reviews help to sell your book. Whether you have one review or 100 reviews, you need reviews. I need reviews. So here's a clip. I don't think I played this yesterday, but if I did, it's okay. People always need reviews. People always need to learn how to get book reviews. All right, here we go.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self-Employment Project on YouTube. Today, what I want to talk to you about is how to get real high-quality reviews, and lots of them, to your Kindle book. So, before I start in, let me talk about some of the things that a lot of people don't really understand about Kindle book reviews, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. I don't know how many times I have seen people promote ebook review exchanges as the best way to get reviews to your book. And there's some validity in this, because, of course, if you're doing an ebook review swap with some other author who has a book, you know, for sale, and you're both guaranteeing each other a review. Here's the problem. One, you're not getting a real review. Ebook review exchanges almost always swap 5-star reviews regardless of the quality of your book. Now, on the surface, that may sound great, but the problem with it is you're not getting honest feedback. You're not getting organic feedback on your book. And if you do too many of these, it shows. You know, if you've got 55-star reviews, and everyone's just praising the heck out of your book, and then you've got five or six two-star reviews down at the bottom, yeah, your average overall review rating is going to still look pretty high, but the people who are looking at the actual reviews to determine whether or not they want to buy your book are pretty quickly going to determine that you have just gone out and gotten people to give your book a five-star review, but the people who are organically buying it are giving it a poor review. Now, of course, that's not to say that just because you're using an ebook review exchange, you have a poor book. They have nothing to do with one another. But you don't really know what people think of your book if you're using an exchange to get book reviews. You have no idea what the actual feedback is, because their assumption is that if they give you a five-star review, you're going to give them a five-star review in exchange, and everyone gets an awesome-looking set of reviews. Now, the other thing about ebook review exchanges is that, contrary to most people's belief, they are against Amazon's terms of service. Now, they're not as bad as paying for a book review. Obviously, paying for a review is a huge no-no in the eyes of Amazon. But Amazon's terms of service on Kindle clearly stipulate that you cannot offer anything in exchange for a review besides a free copy of your book, and that includes another exchange in a swap for your review. So that is where the ebook review exchange breaks down. And people, you know, there are going to be a lot of people who disagree with me on this as far as the validity of ebook review exchanges, but in my experience, they just don't work that well. You get, you know, feedback that's not reflective of what your book really is. And as I said, if you do it too much, you can get away with it at a low level, but if you're doing it all the time, there's a good chance Amazon's going to figure out that you're swapping reviews, and that puts your account in danger, and you don't want to endanger your income stream. So what's the preferable way to get real reviews? Because clearly you can't rely on people buying your book or downloading it for free who are not being asked for a review to review it. I mean, funny story here. I had a book maybe a month or two ago that I released, and it was in a good subject area. The book was pretty high quality, you know, had a fairly good cover on it, and I'd optimized it well, and I put it out for a free review, and I did a free promotion, and I did like a 3-day free giveaway. And during that time, I had close to 1,300 downloads on that book. It went way up into Amazon's free ratings and everything. And I didn't get one review. I did not get one review from the 1,300 people who had downloaded that book. Good, bad, indifferent. You know, you can't rely on people to just review your book, unfortunately. So here is how you can actually get reviews to your book without having to go through this long, complicated process of giving away thousands of books and hoping you get two or three reviews, or, you know, going to review exchanges and doing something that's way against Amazon's terms of service. Here's what you do. Find another book in the same category as yours that has a lot of reviews. Go down to the reviews section and start looking at the profiles of the reviewers who have given that book a 4 or a 5-star review, because these are people that you know are interested in the category that you're writing in. They bought a similar book. They are obviously inclined to not, you know, criticize every piece of a book. You know, they're giving a 4 or 5-star review. That means they're, you know, fairly open to a good book. And these are the people you want to try to get to review your book. So what you're going to do is you're going to go to their profile on Amazon, and you're going to see if they have an email address. Now, not everyone leaves an email address in their Amazon reviewer profile. In fact, not that many people do it. But the good news is that if you can find a book that has, say, 30 or 40 reviews, chances are at least a couple of people in there have given a good review and have an email address on their reviewer page. You're going to take these email addresses and you are going to send an email to these people with a copy of your book attached, just a PDF file or, you know, a text file, whatever, however you want to do it. But you're going to send a copy of your book to them for free. And you're going to say something along the lines of in your email, hello, hope I'm not disturbing you by sending you this email, but I noticed that you gave a review on fill in blank of book that you found their profile through and thought that you might enjoy this book that I have as well because it's in a similar category. Please read it if you feel like it, and here's a totally free copy, and if you're so inclined, afterwards, you can go and leave a review of this book and put a little link to your book sales page right there and send that email off, and it's just that easy. Now, here's the thing. This goes a long way with people. One, you're using very targeted emails. You've got people that you know are interested in your category and who don't mind reviewing a book because you found them through a book that they reviewed, right? So you've got a very targeted set of emails when you do this. Now, the other thing is they perceive that you as the author, and I recommend if you're writing under a pen name, make an email account that's under that pen name. So, like, let's say John Doe is your pen name. You're going to do, like, johndoe@yahoo.com. I'm sure that's long since taken, but you get the point of what I'm saying. You want to make it look like it's coming from the author of the book if you are writing under a pen name. Obviously, if you're not, just use your real email account if it has your name attached to it. So these people are going to have this perception that you're reaching out to them. You're providing them value for free. You're giving them something for nothing and asking if they feel inclined, please just write a review. If not, no big deal. And you want to clearly stipulate that in your email that there are no strings attached, that you're not sending this book and saying you have to review this in order to get this book. And that's not how you want to approach this. You just want to say, hey, I noticed you liked the book I found your review on. Here's a free copy of my book, no strings attached, but if you feel like leaving a review, I'd appreciate it. And it's really just that simple. Now, there are a couple of things, you know, besides that you have to mention in the email. If they do give you a review, they have to disclose that you sent them a free copy. They have to say that in their review in order to be consistent with Amazon's terms of service. Realistically, not everyone does this, and Amazon isn't going to shut you down if someone forgets to put that in their review. It's just what Amazon prefers to see if you're going to go this way. Now, another thing you can do that I really like is, now you can employ this method that I just described to you at any time. You can go looking for email accounts and, you know, send free copies of your book and, you know, say, if you feel like reviewing it, here's the link to put a review on Amazon. But if you already have a free promotion schedule, what you can do instead is send them a link to your book and tell them when the dates it's going to be free are, okay? So all you do is you structure your email exactly the same way, but instead of attaching a copy of the book, you send them a link to your sales page and you say, my book will be free from September 4th until September 7th, you know, whatever the actual date range is that you're going to be in. And that way, they go, they download your book, and when they review, it's a verified review, which is even better than an unverified review. And the thing with that is, they don't have to disclose at that point that you sent them a free copy of the book, because you didn't send them a free copy of the book. All you did was send them a link to where they could download the book for free, like any other Amazon customer. Now, when you're working with people's emails like this, you obviously don't want to, like, throw them on your email list if you've got one, because that counts as spamming. They haven't opted in, but by providing their email addresses on their Amazon page, they have pretty much opened themselves up to being personally contacted by authors who are looking for reviews. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Don't treat these people like they're on your email list, like they've opted in somewhere. They haven't. They're doing you a favor by reviewing, and you want to make sure that you're sending them, you know, that free content in order to justify that. Now, a lot of you are probably thinking, this sounds like a lot of work, going through all of these individual books that are similar to mine and finding these people who have reviewed them and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, especially since not everyone attaches an email address to their reviewer profile. There is a tool, and I'm going to leave a link to the website down in the description. The website's called Author Marketing Club, and they have, as part of their premium membership, which is about $25 a month, I'll admit the price is a little high, but the tool that they offer with it is pretty well worth it if you're going to employ this to get reviews to your books. They offer a tool that you can just put in keywords for your book, what it's about, and they'll come up with all sorts of books just in this reviewer tool is what they call it, reviewer grabber tool, I'm sorry, is what they call it, and they'll come up with all these books, you click on them individually, and what they will do is they will mine all of those reviews for people who have attached reviewer emails to their reviewer account. So let's say you've got a book that's in a similar category to yours that has 50 reviews on it. Now, do you really want to spend the time to individually go through each and every one of those 50 reviews looking for someone who has left an email address? Probably not. You can use this tool, and it will just automatically mine, and it can do, like, multiple books at the same time. So it takes a process that could take you, you know, an hour to get maybe a handful of good email addresses and turns it into click, 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 click.
Yeah, I know. It cleans you out.
Look for reviews, and you've suddenly got, you know, just like that, maybe 10, maybe 15 reviewer emails, and you're going to send then your free copy of the book out to those email addresses, and it makes the whole process a lot simpler. Like I said, I'm going to leave a link in the description to that website just in case any of you are interested. They do have a free version. That doesn't include the reviewer grabber tool. And just so you know, these guys do have an affiliate program, and no, the link that I'm going to put in the description is not an affiliate link. I don't put any affiliate links in videos ever. So that's really the best way to get honest, real reviews to your Kindle book. And I think that once you try this out a couple of times, you're going to find that you actually prefer this to, you know, going to these review exchanges and getting what you honestly know are fake reviews. So hope this has helped you. Reviews are a huge part of success in Kindle. So hopefully this has kind of given you a roadmap to get yourself to a large number of real reviews on your book. If you did like this video, I'm trying to grow this YouTube channel, so I'd really, really appreciate a like down in the feedback section here. And if you're not already a subscriber and you did...
All right, we're back on the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago, WTTTY. It's 6:54. That's what it says at the bottom of my computer. Okay, I'm probably being a little facetious at that, but that's what it actually says. I want to get back on talking about Browner espousing about taking over Chicago public schools. He says that the state is more prepared to strike a deal with the teachers than Emmanuel can, despite not having been able to make a deal with one of the state's largest unions, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, known as ESME. And I quote, "We can get a deal done." This is what Rauner is saying. "We are going to get a deal done with ESME. That is good for the taxpayers and fair." Let me say something, people. Rauner does not do anything for the taxpayer. Rauner does things for his donors, for his rich buddies. If he's saying he's going to do something good for the taxpayers, total lie. Rauner does not care about your job. He does not care about your job. He's a businessman. He's out for the businesses. He's a businessman. He's out for entrepreneurship, ownership, proprietorship. He doesn't care about your job. He's lying. "We should get a deal done with the teachers union," Rauner said. He says CPS has been mismanaged by leadership. I agree with him there. I totally, and it's been for years. And controlled by the teachers' union, who has run it for their own benefit. I think I might agree with him right there. Not for the benefit of the school children and taxpayers. I disagree with him there because he sounds like he cares. He doesn't. He doesn't. Rahm Emanuel's administration scoffed at Rauner's suggestion that the state could somehow move immediately to seize control of Chicago Public Schools. City Hall sources insist that the part of the school code does not pass, and that to authorize a state takeover, Rauner would be required to pass a bill changing that language to include the Chicago Public Schools. You know, it seemed like he would know that, but, you know, Rauner, I don't know. He's the guy is just hell-bent on taking over everything. He wants to own everything. And he's just a politician. He's just a governor. He can be voted out. He can be recalled. He acts like he's God Almighty, our savior, coming to save Chicago when he's made the state worse because there is no budget. There is no budget. That's something that the Democratic legislature, legislative leaders would have to, would never allow, sources say. It's a lame brain idea and a colossal waste of time, someone's saying. He needs legislative authorization, and everyone knows that dead on arrival, DOA. That's not going to happen. No way. Everybody knew the legislation was dead before he even had a chance to introduce it, said a top mayoral aide who asked to remain anonymous. Why would you want to keep yourself secret? If you say something valuable, let people know who you are. Referring to the House Speaker Mike Madigan and Senate Leader President John Cullerton, the mayor aide said the two main folks who would have to sign off on it happen to be opposed to it and strongly opposed. Yeah, a lot of things that Rauner proposed, they are just that. They are proposals, nothing more. Proposals. It has to go through the legislative body in order for it to become law, in order for the state to take it over. It has to go through the legislative body process. And Rauner wants to, he wants to do everything. He wants to try to find a way around it so he can control everything. If Rauner wanted to be productive and helpful to the Chicago Public Schools, Emmanuel Aide said, he'd stop the theater and focus on an education funding bill that helps the state and CPS, which is on his desk. Cullerton on Tuesday said the CPS bill won't go anywhere because Rauner refused to sign it. Rauner can take the Chicago Public Schools and the state of Illinois out of the toilet if he just signs a funding method, sign a budget, and it will be over in 10 minutes. But right, he's got to be a clown. He's got to get in front of the cameras and act as if he's, you know, Lord and Savior when he's the devil in disguise. You know, so it's all theater with Rauner. That's what it is. 2 weeks ago, Rauner floated his plan for a state takeover of Chicago Public Schools, and that paved the way for CPS to declare bankruptcy. And that could pave the way for CPS to declare bankruptcy. A few days later, CPS abruptly put off an $875 million borrowing needed to get through the year and try to stop classroom cuts. Now Rauner is doubling down on his threat as a state takeover, just as CPS is attempting to salvage. He salvaged itself. He is something else. The guy, he's relentless. The guy is relentless in his fuel, if I can say fuel, in his demented way of wanting to take over schools, wanting to take over Chicago and plant his own people there. If Rauner took over Chicago Public Schools, he would plant his own people in the school, Republicans, and the schools would just be, public schools would be no more. From my thinking, they would be no more. All right, Claypool also got a dig in at Rauner's idea to take over Chicago Public Schools, saying that the real problem is funding formula that is penalizing the district. He called it blatantly discriminatory and separate and unequal. On that issue, Claypool and Lewis agreed with Lewis blasting Rauner. They all, you know, they're all together on this and taking out Rauner for his stupid suggestions on taking over the Chicago Public Schools and firing them, because that's what they know. He wants to take over the schools, get rid of Claypool, get rid of Karen Lewis, the teacher's president, and all the union members, because he can't stand unions. But that's not going to happen, because it has to go through a legislative process. That's what it has to go through. No matter who he talks to, that's where it has to go to. Rauner, Bruce Rauner, can't get a footing. He can't get a footing in Illinois because it's Democratic controlled. And he is one man, one governor. And you know what? I want to say something. This is, if I can diverse, This is February 2nd. This is Black History Month. Yeah, this is Black History Month. And I'm going to have to do something for Black History. I want to do something right now. I want to play I have a Dream speech by Martin Luther King for Black History Month. And it is super duper. I want to play it. I've played it before on the show. I think this would – the last time I played it, I think I played it on January 15th, which was his birthday. Now, since it's Black History Month, I want to play it once more, because I think he was I think that he was one of the most important figures in the history of the United States, Martin Luther King. This is Martin Luther King, and I Have a Dream speech on the George Wilder Jr. Show for Black History Month. I always enjoy listening to it. You know, it's so inspirational.
At this time, I have the honor to present to you the moral leader of our nation. I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, The life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. And they have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities. Knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed, let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. And this will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring." And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
Yeah, that's always a rousing speech, even though it was made, maybe 50 years ago, 52, 53, something like that. Anyway, half a century, well over half a century ago. And it's still powerful and it still rings free today, Martin Luther King. All right, on the George Wilder Jr. Show for Black History Month. Wow, I'm going to have some more stuff on Black History Month. I want to let everybody know out there that I'm not going to be on the show tomorrow. I'm going to have to go to the doctor, of course. Pretty sure you want me to be well so I can keep doing the shows. So I have to go to the doctor, so I won't be doing the show tomorrow. But Friday, I have a guest, Yvette W. Jones. I'm pretty sure she's going to tell us what she's got good for us and whatever she's offering can do for us. You know, I always try to have people on the show that's going to teach me something, going to show you out there something. And I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. We still have time left in the show, but I'm just always so gracious to thank everybody. And we were talking about before the Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, we were talking about the Chicago public schools. And they are in really trouble. Actually, the state is in a lot of trouble, not just the schools, not just the city. We don't even have a budget. Rauner is always trying so quick to blame someone else for his inactions. And if you people around the country, around the United States world, if you've been listening to this show, then you know who Bruce Rauner is, because I've been railing on his ass, you know. And I don't know, this guy is, I've heard some people say that he's the devil. He might be. You know, because this guy does not have a caring bone in his body. And if he says he does, it's not. He wants to take over the schools because he feels that Chicago is failing the schools. So he wants the state to take over so he can bum rush the unions to get them out. He doesn't like the unions, but he it's funny, but he does not care about these unions. This guy, he hates unions. And unions have been here for decades. They're not going to go anywhere. If it wasn't for unions, you would not have a 40-day work week. You would not have time and a half. You would not have weekends off. You would not be able to raise your pay or get promotions in your workplace and a whole host of other things if it wasn't for unions. And he wants to tear that apart. If Rauner somehow was successful at getting rid of unions, what would that mean? It will mean you would have no protections in the workplace. The supervisor, the manager can get rid of your ass at any whim. If you come in there with your shoes untied, they can say, hey, wow, you're fired. They have the right to lower your pay to $2 an hour, to $2 an hour, if he tries to get rid of unions. This is what he wants. And I think one of the main reasons to why this guy wants to get rid of unions is because, I've said this a million times, because unions are powerful. They are powerful. And Rauner wants that power for himself. He's not going to say that, but you can infer that in some of the things he says and in his actions. You can infer those kinds of things. All right, you're listening to the Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live. You can listen to this show anytime you want to, you know, anytime at your convenience. It will be right here. It's not going to go anywhere. All you got to do is just, pull up Blog Talk Radio and the George Wilder Jr. Show, and it is right there for you to enjoy, for you to devour. Be right back, folks. Thank you. Goodbye, everybody. Until Friday. Thank you for being here.